prior board members, including the prior chair, who put out a really beautiful statement about just, you know, the foundation that they laid over the years. And any board is hard work. And so there's just no, you know, we want to make sure that nobody's hard work is discounted and brushed aside. And so I'm actually working on a chance to kind of sit down with the prior board chair here soon to just make sure that I understand what they were working on and that I understand what was important to them. Is if there was a stone unturned or if there was a door that's still cracked open, what can we do to pick that up and make sure that it's not lost in transition? And so I'm really excited for that to happen, because even though you can call this a new board, it's not. I mean, the board has been in place nearly 10 years. And so there are a lot of what I would call just legacy community members who everybody knows who they are, and they have done so much work for the Houston LGBTQ community for, I mean, decades on decades. And so, it's only fair and right that we make sure that we're hearing them too, and caring over things that they feel are still maybe hanging in the balance. And so even though the transition is still transitioning, if you will, it's gone well. And I was really pleased and just very honestly honored that the prior chair felt so positive and just so encouraged about the new board and the new members. And again, if you look at the board slate, which we've now posted, it's online on the City of Houston's page for, like, they have like a page, you can Google it, where you can look at the boards, all the mayor advisory boards and city boards. And so if you look at the names, I mean, there's just an impressive group of people. And so we definitely are going to be able to get some good work accomplished.
Yeah, y'all have a very intentionally diverse board. But back to that first meeting that y'all had this week, tell us how that went. What were some items of discussion?
Sure. So we kind of had a pivot in our agenda because, like I mentioned, it was very important that we heard from Mayor Whitmire. He's incredibly busy. He's still less than 2 years into his term. And so one of the things he mentioned, and this is what I've been trying to stay very aware of, is, I mean, being that new into your term, there's still a lot of reactive decision making that has to happen. And one of the things that I asked about when this board was kind of being activated again, if you will, by the mayor, was why? Because it's been a year and a half, a little longer. Why now? And one of the things that, and this is going to fall into your question, because this is covered in our first meeting. I mean, the mayor and Scout both kind of shared that you know, he had been spending a lot of time dealing with just so many other things that had kind of fallen right into his lap. I think everybody knows trash and recycling pickup has kind of been a struggle. And so there's been a lot of focus on that. And that's a lot more encompassing because that kind of falls into all of the households around the city. And then just the different things going on with HISD and just a laundry list of other things. And so it was very obvious to me in our first meeting that my concern and ask about why now was being answered. The mayor pulled us into his office about halfway through our meeting. And before that, our agenda, we really just had a chance to sit down and chat and get to know each other. Before we visited with the mayor, what I shared with the board, you know, people have asked me over and over, what are your plans? What are your goals? And while I do have some, my underlying and just, I mean, top of the mind goal is to listen. Because there are 22 people on the board, and though all of those people are leaders, all of those people have a reason that they said yes. Nobody had to say yes. And there's reasons that people endorsed and recommended them and reasons that the mayor appointed them. And so I want to understand all of that before I come back around and say, this is what we're going to do, or this is what we would like to see, or because I, you know, Clay can have a lot of opinions and a lot of goals and aspirations, but I want to hear it from the board members so that we can all be together and unify on what we want to accomplish. And so we really spent the first 30 minutes or so of our meeting doing that, just saying hello to each other and mingling around and sharing a couple of reasons that we were on the board and some of our background. And then we were kind of tentative to the mayor's schedule and kind of trying to cooperate with that. And so he kind of went above and beyond what I expected and had someone come take us from our meeting space into his office. And we were able to sit with him in a conference situation in his office and listen to him for nearly an hour. And what really spoke to me was He took the time to ask every single person, literally all of us, who we were, where we were from, and why we were on the board. And it's interesting because that's exactly what I was doing before we went down there or up there. And so it showed me that he's in listening mode too and trying to understand what's important to our community right now. We also had a chance to hear from him on, I mean, his 5+ decades in different political positions, particularly as a state senator, and all of the different things that he did to support our community, including the trans community too, everybody. And just, but he was very specific on each kind of each of it, the trans community and the gay community and people who are in our community who were impacted by AIDS and HIV. And he just was very supportive and just and really pushed a lot against the grain when he didn't have to in a very conservative state. And so I was really impressed with that. And looking at people's faces as he was sharing these things, I think that a lot of people were realizing a lot of history from Mayor Whitmire that they maybe weren't aware of. Or if they were, it's, I'm sure it resonates differently when someone shares with you, you know, face to face like that. And I think it left us with the impression that he really hopes and plans to have an open door policy for our board, particularly through me and the board going to me on things that I can go back to the mayor on or to his liaisons on. And so that I think we all left really motivated and excited. We once we got done meeting with the mayor, we had a chance to take photos with him and to kind of get to know chief of staff and just some of the other folks that were in the room, and make sure that we were all familiar with one another. And we also talked about things we would like to accomplish or and kind of the visibility that we want the board to have. And so some of the plans and things that the mayor, even some of them he suggested, is kind of getting more acquainted with our council members, having some kind of open environment, settings where people can come in and talk to us and be there with us and maybe some council members, maybe at some point the mayor, when we can kind of get that figured out and scheduled. And so he was very open to those things and actually suggested kind of the open reception with council members so that we can make sure we're hearing and talking to the council members across the city, because those will also be a really important piece of the puzzle as we try to start getting initiatives moving and accomplished and making sure that we're on the same page as city council. And so I think that's a really great starting point. And my plan, kind of after that meeting concluded, is I started yesterday with sitting down one-on-one with each board member. So I have another 20 or so to go, but I just got started. And through the next 4 to 6 weeks, my plan is to sit down one-on-one, understand a lot about who they are, and honestly develop what I would call close enough to a friendship with each of our board members so that we can continue working together. And my hope is from there, we start structuring our committees and kind of making sure committees check into what the community is wanting to see. And I think listening sessions will help get us there. And so that's another plan too, is to start looking for places to do that, whether it's the Muncher Center, whether it's somewhere else in town. I say the Muncher Center because it's such a hub for everything in our community, but anywhere, I'm making sure that we're spreading across the city and listening to everybody.
Yeah, thank you for outlining that vision. And that actually answered my last question, but it raised a follow-up question, is that, in our region, we have a lot of queer-serving coalitions and boards, such as Harris County's LGBTQI plus Commission and Queens of Houston. And so you mentioned like listening sessions, but wanting to hear more as we close off about ways for community members to get involved with y'all's work and y'all's intentions to get involved with other regional activities and coalitions.
Yeah, and the commission is a great thing to mention. I'm familiar with several people on that commission, including Thomas Lopez, who I've known for a long time. And so my hope is to start connecting with them too. I think a combined meeting at some point where we can have both boards together just to talk about some shared initiatives, and also maybe moving into 2026, like plans to come together. And when there are community summits, and I know that there's many NFPs starting to plan those, and the Mantra Center has already started that last year, is how can we be present in those settings together and unified? Because even though the county is broader than the city, when we come together, I mean, we're going to be representing millions of people. And so I think there's just a lot of power in that. And I do plan on seeing us collaborate specifically with the commission on several things. And to answer how the community can get involved, one of the things I'll be doing soon, and so hopefully if any of our leaders or our board members or people who are volunteers that participate in any of the nonprofits that benefit the LGBTQ plus community, I encourage you to reach out to me so that I know who you are and where you are. I'm already trying to do that on my own, but one person can only scope out so many things. And hopefully the board members too will kind of help me kind of bubble some of those up so I make sure we're seeing and talking to everyone. But my plan is to sit down with those community members, whether it's in a group setting or one at a time, I don't know. But I want to make sure that all of them have a seat at the table when it comes to being at our table for the city's board, for the mayor's board. And so my plan from here is just to continue being in listening mode. And I would encourage it, literally anybody listening, it really doesn't matter if you're a leader, anybody in the community, to reach out, go to the city's website, find the board members on the website, email us, call us, reach out and tell us what you're thinking and how we can benefit and what you want to see from the board. That is what we're here for. And so it's important to me to hear from everybody, honestly, allies included and all of the above. And so kind of to close out that the response to that, I would really ask that everybody just know that we're going to be out and about. We are already looking at, I think one of the first committees everyone will be in agreement on is some type of events committee where we can start getting a community calendar, if you will, for us, for the board, together so that we can start showing up for things, not just for the organizations you see everywhere, for all of them, because they're all doing great things. I actually go to the Truth Project's open mic nights occasionally, and it's some of the most touching and powerful testimonies and just talent that I've ever seen. And so let's say things like that happen throughout town that not everybody may know about. I would just love to continue knowing more about that and what those events are and where they are. And one other thing too is, as small and kind of silly as it sounds, the first thing I said was we need name tags so that when we're out, people say, oh, that's one of the mayor's board members. I have something to say. And like, you just walk up and talk. I mean, that's what we're there for. And so I already mentioned I would happily sponsor that. I just want us to have name tags so people know who we are and where we are. And so as you see us, stop us. That was my ask of the board, and that is what we're here for. We're in listening mode for the next several months.
Thank you for sharing this. I've been speaking with Clay Melder, the brand new chair of the Houston Mayor's LGBTQ plus Advisory Board in 2025 Houston Business Journal 40 Under 40 honoree. Clay, thank you so much for joining us.
And thank you, Davis, and we look forward to the work ahead.
And with that, I'll be speaking with the former chair of the Advisory Board and president of one of Texas's largest LGBTQ plus fundraising events, Bunnies on the Bayou, Jacques Bourgeois, about his sudden dismissal at the hands of Mayor Whitmire after years of serving as chair under the former Mayor Turner.
Thank you for listening to Queer Voices. I'm Davis Mendoza de Ruzman, and today I'm speaking with Jacques Bourgeois, a longtime Houston LGBTQ plus advocate, former chair of the Mayor's LGBTQ plus Advisory Board, and president of the Bunnies on the Bayou. And president of Bunnies on the Bayou, one of Texas's largest LGBTQ plus fundraising events. Recently, Jacques has been at the center of a political shakeup involving Houston Mayor John Whitmire's administration and the advisory board he once led. Welcome to the show, Jacques.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I don't want to start this interview with the end. I want to start this interview with the beginning. So tell me about the beginning of your journey with the Mayor's LGBTQ plus Advisory Board and some accomplishments and some things that you're proud of before we get into this end.
I would say, so to start with, my start with the board kind of goes back before the board existed. It started with Hero. So like 2014, dealing with Mayor Parker. And the Houston Equal Rights Ordinance. That's really where I kind of got my start in just the real activism in our city and being involved in our local politics. And from there was towards the end of her term, you know, just being involved with Mayor Parker. We had the privilege of being invited to a lot of the queer leadership within Houston that was involved with the Houston Equal Rights Ordinance. You know, you're Fred Watsons, your Monica Roberts, your Brandon Max, et cetera, were all invited by then candidate Mayor Turner when he was initially running for office. And I shared this little quip of everybody is in this dark room. We're all having our one-on-ones with Mayor Turner as candidate. We're all having little one-on-ones with everyone. And he walked up to me and said, "Hi, I'm Sylvester Turner. I'm running for mayor." And the first words out of my mouth were, "If you don't continue with what Mayor Parker has been doing with Hero or whatever, I'll run against you and I'll win." So kind of set a tone with him, and he bust out laughing. And we became fast friends then, because he was like, "If I don't do a good job, you're gonna run against me." Which I know I didn't really have the cloud, but it's a really funny story. And we started a friendship from there, or professional relationship from then on. Just kind of like he would see me either at my office, or he would see me out and about in community doing things, and he's like, "Oh, there's that guy who's gonna run against me." But I had the opportunity whenever the advisory board was commissioned in 2016, post the Pulse massacre that happened in Orlando. And Mayor Turner's response to that massacre was to create an advisory board of 49 people, which is a lot of people. But I was not on the initial board. It was initially chaired by, I believe, Harrison Guy and Melanie Peng, also my co-grand marshal, Melanie Peng. Shout out. It was initially like led by them, and I was inducted into the board in 2018 as a member, and have been served. I served ever since. In November 2023, our chair, Jeremy Edwards, he stepped down to be a part of the county board and commission, and I was his co-chair. So technically, I've been the chair for a minute, but I was his co-chair, and the bag was left in my table. November 2023, going into, a very into the election year. So we had now Mayor Whitmire and then Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee in the runoff. So we as a board being neutral, just kind of stepped back and let everything lie where it did, land where it did. And we gave then Mayor Whitmire, once he did win the election, some time. You're coming on board, you're getting your stuff together, there's a lot to do. We gave them some time to get their stuff together, which also gave me some time to get our stuff together. Because as you mentioned before, I also run Buddies on the Bayou. So there's a lot of structure. I require a lot of structure in things. So you can't juggle a bunch of stuff if there's no structure in something. So there was a lot of restructuring of our advisory board to have some dedicated chairs, dedicated leaders within it. And we did a significant slim down. Granted, at this point, coming out of COVID or out of COVID, we were no longer 49 people. We were maybe 19 at this point. So it's much, much, much smaller. And our goal was really to become a chamber of resource, very much mirroring what our Chamber of Commerce, our LGBTQI Chamber of Commerce does. But, providing resources for community. And that's kind of where we've landed. But part of that challenge with that was getting in touch with Mayor Whitmire. We've made several requests and just kind of fell on dead ears. We would get advisors, but it's not exactly the same. We had very robust relationship with Mayor Turner. Even, going back from Mayor Turner, Mayor Parker was very involved with community, even though there wasn't an advisory board at the time. I kind of think of like the task force that was for Hero was kind of a lot of the same. But you kind of lose that one-on-one interaction, but also you, and now I'm rambling. You kind of lose that one-on-one interaction, but also there's a brand new administration in office that's making pretty significant changes within the city. So we want to make sure our big thing was making sure what we were planning as a board was in line with what it is that Mayor Whitmire would like to do, and what his priorities are. So we're not going completely left and he wants to go right, and then everybody's in a tire in inside of an entire cluster, so to say. But We, like I said, we made several requests to meet with Mayor. We kind of did not hear from him. And fast forward to November and January with the new federal administration, a lot of community has lost steam with a lot of what to do. And we kind of reached back out and kind of said, hey, we can strategize together. That and we still kind of didn't hear anything until June, which now we're current. We didn't really hear anything until June, when I guess Mayor Whitmire and his team posted a Pride post, and a few people online were said something along the lines of what happened to your advisory board. And that's when Channel 13 reached out to us, and I kind of gave them like, hey, we're just trying to get his attention. We're still here. We meet bi-monthly. And if we're not meeting bi-monthly, we are in a group chat always. I have some great people on this board who are super enthusiastic about, getting inside of the jails and making sure the surveys that we do send out to community are we're just making sure we're getting services down to people, or at least answering people in community, and reminding them that we're here, so to say. But I did an interview with Channel 13, because if you can't get information from within the government, you go to the Fourth Estate, journalist. Hey, you go to the Fourth Estate to kind of put some pressure and say, hey, we're trying to meet with you. We'd love to meet with you. We want to strategize with you, yada, yada, yada. And after that interview, we had a conversation maybe 2 weeks later with the Boards and Commissions director, where they informed us that, hey, we would like to move a different direction. We're thinking of a board refresh, which I was super okay with. You kind of speak up and you kind of expect like, hey, maybe we need to move another way. And I want to keep that clear. We serve at the leisure of the administration. We're an advisory board, but we were informed that they were looking to do a refresh of the entire board, or refresh of the board. And I was like, okay. And I asked, what does transition look like? And is the current board allowed to, reapply? And we were told you can reapply, et cetera. But my big thing was, what does transition look like? And then I was informed that we'd be in touch in maybe a week or so, maybe a week or two. We'll touch back with another meeting. And I was like, okay, that's fine, And I sent out an email to the rest of the board members informing them that, hey, they want to transition, go ahead and apply here online, et cetera. And then maybe a week later, everybody basically received a termination letter from the city, which I wasn't really expecting it to be so cut and dry of just, okay, now you're out. There was discussion of a transition, and that's what I conveyed to the rest of the board. But it really just felt abrupt and a little retaliatory. Not a little, it felt very retaliatory, which was fine if it was just me as the chair, but there's a lot of people on the board who are doing fantastic work and just really weren't ready for that, but it is what it is. And I have nothing but like great enthusiasm for this next board, because I really feel like the energy for the board, there's visibility for the board now. And that was always one of our primary functions, was to make sure there's visibility for this board, make sure that there's accountability on behalf of the administration, to make sure this board and commission continues. Because a lot of what the questions that we did have without having being able to actually meet with mayor and meet with the new administration was, do they want this to continue? And I'm really hopeful and really happy for the new board, because I feel like they are left with the visibility of a new board and the accountability on behalf of the administration. Because there's awareness in our community of, hey, you've got to make sure this is done right, because you kind of fumbled the bag a little bit. And I don't have any animosity or whatever. I know you said before we started this interview, you're just like, oh, and I'm like, it's not that deep, I promise. It is a board and commission. It is all right. Like, everybody, I'm fine. I am remarkably busy all the time. I am booked and busy. I'm 100% fine. But That's pretty much the story right there. I've rambled for like 5 minutes.
So you said you said in an interview that you reached out to the mayor 5 or 6 times over 18 months without success. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Can you walk us through what those requests look like? Was it through like email or phone call, and what responses you got back? Was it like through scouts? Or yeah, walk us through that process of reaching out to the mayor.
So it's a mixture of a few. The initial reach out is through there's a portal in the city's website to actually make a request to meet with the mayor. And that is across the board. Any and everybody can make that request. It's kind of a public meetings type of thing. And I believe it goes through like MOES or something like that. We made our initial request through there and got nothing back. Fast forward to about, oh, May of last year of 2024, I think somebody gave me a contact with the new Board and Commission's chair, Scott Odegaard. And I was able to, I was actually meeting with, or I was speaking in front of council in regards to the Two Pride situation that we had going on. And just because Mayor and Councilmember Castillo had made a comment about why do we have two prides, and I went in front of council to really reiterate there's really not a reason for us to have two prides, and it actually creates a safety hazard because there's a lot of coordination that happens for these large events. And our primary goal as a board and commission, and the primary reason we were created was to make sure nothing like Pulse ever happens again. And that raised the flag to our entire board of this is a high risk. We need to actually talk to city and to council and see if they can influence us to like, it's not a problem to have two prides or whatever, but back to back a week after each other, it's a lot, and it creates a higher risk. And ironically, the very next day, a whole FBI report came out about it being higher risk. Am I rambling again? Because I'm rambling again.
It's a helpful context. This is good, but I also this is a good like segue, I think, into like another question that I had as you were speaking earlier. So the mayor's office has said that the mayor's office had said that your board had been inactive and that most members' terms expired back in 2020. But from your perspective as a chair up until this year, how active was the board during that time?
We've been active pretty much this entire time. We would meet, like I said, we'd meet bi-monthly officially, and then our executive team would usually meet like monthly. So fairly active. The answer to that is, were we able to really accomplish or do anything? The answer is not really, no, because we didn't have input from mayor. And part of what we were told whenever we actually did get a conversation with Scout was we are to function as, again, a full circle back to I require structure to run multiple things. We were informed that we are required to run the board ourselves as a pri as pretty much as private citizens. So there's really no city support. We're not a governmental entity as an advisory board. We are not a nonprofit as an advisory board. So that if you understand anything of the nonprofit world, there's a lot of coordination stuff. Google Workspace is very expensive. If you're not a nonprofit, you can't get it free. And you kind of work through the grace of other nonprofits. And fortunately, I was able to do a lot of stuff through Bunnies on the Bayou just because I'm the chief officer and my board had approved, like, well, we can help out the board commission just a little bit here, but once it started to get too expensive, it's like we got to cut it off. And that's part of the problem is there was really no structure from the city. How do we actually function, financially? Are we a business? Are we not? There's a lot of question. If we go away, how do we fundraise? There was a lot of questions that we were not able to get answered. So, and whenever you're a completely volunteer run board, it's hard to corral the cats when there's no direction from, up top. Do I still want y'all to exist? Did that make sense? I'm sorry.
No, yeah, no, that is helpful. And I also wanted to touch on something else that you had mentioned earlier, but the red line is pulling in, so I might need to hold off, or I might need to repeat myself. So as you mentioned, the advisory board was formed in response to a tragedy, Pulse, in 2016, and it's meant to be a channel between the mayor's office and the LGBTQ plus community. What message do you think the mayor is sending by dissolving the current board without any dialogue? How does that speak to the mission, do you think?
It's well, I kind of think the overall message isn't anything negative towards like not wanting to have a board and commission. I think the overall message about that was and we kind of got that with like the terrors of I'll just kind of do whatever I want whenever I want. That's kind of terrible to say. But it kind of eroded the trust of community that we've had with our elected officials, or our highest elected officials in this city, because it made people ask questions of, well, do you want to have this? Which shouldn't have been a question any of us have had to ask, is do you want to have this? It should be a given, because mayor support of community go dates back to 2003, with Lawrence V. Ferguson. Lawrence V. Ferguson with the Texas sodomy laws when he was in words the Texas legislature. So it's there. I think it brought into question just his track record, for the most part of you should want to champion this more. Why aren't you? And the excuse that we kind of got with that was there's 170 some odd boards and commissions. We don't have time for all of that. But fast forward to, 2 months ago, they suddenly had time to interview 50, 60 some odd people, and replace the board for us, in place of us or whatever, without our input as a current standing board. So zero transition. It just said, I don't care what you want. This is what we're going to do. And that makes me sound like a terrible person, but like still within his right to do, but it kind of went like, baby, that's not the move. Like,
As a follow-up, what do you think like is the move? What would you feel is the right way to bring in these new voices? Sure, but without losing that without losing that continuity.
I think what I brought up to the director in the first place was what the question I immediately asked was, what does transition look like? Because it's not about we need to sit here and be the ones to be the champion. That's not never the case. We plant seeds as leaders. We plant seeds and we walk away and let something grow. Like that's something you that's the core of me. I'm gonna say that I'm very much the core of me is I'm gonna plant a seed and walk away. I don't need to be the end all be all champion for that. My ego is not there. But at least the transition of we've been working on a lot of stuff. There's a lot of historical stuff, that's we've been working on since 2016, that just needs to have that constant flow. And it just felt very abrupt to just go boom, gone, or we don't care about it. We'll start fresh. And that's a disadvantage to the new board, honestly, because you're making them start off without any like prior information or prior structure that could be slightly beneficial or slightly helpful, whatever it could be or it couldn't be, whatever. But like part of that transition is closure for, the current board.
Yeah, thank you for that. A couple of questions left. Next week, I have an interview with the new chair of the mayor's LGBTQ plus advisory committee. And you mentioned that this the and you mentioned that the mayor's move may have eroded public trust in the LGBTQ plus community due to this administration's abrupt proceedings. So how can the mayor and his administration, in your eyes, earn back that trust?
Just by doing right by community, doing right by this board, the new board that's coming online, being accountable to them and actually meeting with them. That'd be fantastic. And like I said before, I have nothing but the highest hopes for this new board, and I'm excited that part of what our board going out on the note that we kind of went out on gave them a lot of has given them a lot of visibility and a lot of I would say a little bit of leverage with mayor that wasn't there before. for our on behalf of our community, because at the end of the day, it's about making sure our community has the resources and has the representation that matter. That is what really, really matters. You know, as any random drag queen would say, F my drag, it's not about me.
No, thank you for that. A couple final questions. Yeah. So a couple final questions. What is next for you? What are next steps for you in your life and in your journey in terms of advocacy and work with the LGBTQ plus community? We'd love to learn. We'd love to know more.
My journey moving forward is, well, it's always going to be bunnies involved. That's for sure. Lord, come join us. But overall, my journey in community is always going to continue. I love the Houston LGBTQIA community. It is my core. I've been active in community since 2009, back whenever some friends and I started Houston Gamers way back when. I'm always going to be involved. I'm always going to be an advocate. I'm always going to be a champion. And, especially with this new board coming online, I'm always going to be behind them. If they ever need anything or whatever, I'm here. By all means, I'm always an avid supporter of our community. Liga Biga Tiga first, LGBTQA plus people first. I didn't mean to say Liga Biga Tiga. It's such a stupid acronym. I love it.
No, I love that. And finally, what's your message to Houston's LGBTQI plus community about staying engaged, especially when it comes to holding leadership accountable and making sure our voices are heard?
My message to them about get involved. Get involved, get engaged. At every and any level, because we need it, especially now under our current administration regime or whatever you want to call it, even within our local legislature, we need as many new leaders as new leaders, old leaders, etc., because the burnout's real. I will tell you that about a lot of our community leaders, the burnout is very, very real. And we need as many people as possible who are passionate. A leader looks like what you want yourself to look like. You don't have to be degreed to the tens and nines or whatever. You just have to care and be passionate. That's it.
Thank you so much for that. I've been speaking with Jacques Bourgeois, a longtime Houston LGBTQ plus advocate, former chair of the mayor's LGBTQ plus advisory board, and president of Bunnies on the Bayou, one of Texas's largest LGBTQ plus fundraising events. Jacques Bourgeois, thank you so much.
Thank you.
This has been Queer Voices, heard on KPFT Houston and as a podcast, available from several podcasting sources. Check our webpage, queervoices.org, for more information. Queer Voices executive producer is Brian Levinka. Deborah Moncrief Bell is co-producer. Brett Cullum, Davis Mendoza Druzman,
Eva Michelle Gans,
Mel Peterson,
and
Joel Tatum
are contributors. The News Wrap segment is part of another podcast called This Way Out, which is produced in Los Angeles.
Some of the material in this program has been edited to improve clarity and runtime. This program does not endorse any political views or animal species. Views, opinions, and endorsements are those of the participants and the organizations they represent. In case of death, please discontinue use and discard remaining products.
For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
The 8-track tape format was introduced in 1965 and held its reign through the 1970s. This is our focus. In the beginning, 8-track was an automotive-only format, so music from this period sounded best when it was played really loud through Jensen Triac speakers mounted on the back dash of a Camaro. Return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear on 8-track Radio.
Join Tom Richards for 8-Track Radio, Sunday morning at 5, here on KPFT.
Yeah, I know for a lot of you that's a little bit early, or maybe it's a little bit too late. But either way, it's always available on the archive. Go to kpft.org and click on Archive. You'll find it.
Are you apprehensive about listening to KPFT online? Maybe worried about becoming addicted to the convenience of having all three KPFT channels at your fingertips? If so, it would be appropriate for you to conquer your fears. The fastest, easiest way to do that, the apropos way to do that, is to download the brand new KPFT radio app. Available today in the Apple App Store and by September 1st on Android platforms, the KPFT radio app allows fast access to all three KPFT streaming channels, our archives, latest news, and much more. The app has already been noted to be widely approved by those already using it. Download the KPFT app today on your phone, tablet, or other devices. Thanks for listening to KPFT and supporting KPFT Houston. We appreciate it.
Hi, this is Steven. I discovered 90.1 KPFT like a lot of folks did. Around 1984, I was ready for some different music that hadn't already been served to me 100 times over like drive-through hot dogs. Tuned in to KPFT and heard artists like Steel Eye Span and James McMurtry and Richard Thompson. Music you don't hear elsewhere. Oh, and I'll never forget Chris Hirsch's Bluegrass Zone and Drew Bradford's Montrose Beer and Gun Club. Anyway, I figure any radio station that survived getting shot at by idiots and dynamited off the air twice is worth a good listen.
We love hearing from our listener sponsors. KPFT is only possible because of small donations from listeners just like you. Become a member today by calling 713-526-5738 and choose option one, or visit kpft.org to make a secure donation. Thanks for supporting your community radio station, KPFT.
Cruising on the lake, yeah, man. Sandy, he's the doo-dah man, bought us a bunch of beer and wine, and we're gonna chug it down. Grateful Dead is trivia, winning a prize, man. You'll snag some swag if you know all your stuff. Questions all about Jerry and Bobby and Bill, man. Study real hard, relax, and take a big puff. Cruising on the lake, yeah, man.